So learn what works, combine that with what you enjoy, and keep doing that over and over. But you do you. You talk about what is your passion about. The first thing I recommend to anyone who wants to start creating a brand for themselves is find their voice. And what I mean by their voice is find something they are passionate enough about that they can share content about consistently. The first time you do something, you're going to be awful. If anyone wants to go and watch one of Maria's first videos, I bet they're not as good as the one that's going to come out today. And you could do the same with me. My first video, I used my webcam for audio. I had awful lighting, you know, and all I did is I just said, you know what, I want to try it. I want to get it out there, because if I waited till I had the perfect conditions and the perfect setup, then I would have been wasting a lot of time or spending a lot of money. And then I could have learned that it wasn't for me. I didn't enjoy it.
Hi, I'm Maria, and this is the Agile State of Mind. Welcome. And welcome to this podcast edition where I interview interesting people from the agile world. And today I have with me retrospective legend, Chris Stone from Virtually Agile. Hey, Chris.
Hey there, Maria. How's it going?
It's going good. Nice to have you here. I'm so glad we can finally meet via Zoom.
It's a pleasure. Yeah. Hopefully we'll catch up in person sometime.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Let's see if we, you know, maybe we will go to some conference together, and that would be a great opportunity. Chris and I are actually meeting first time after we have known each other for quite some time via LinkedIn, right? And we share the same agile interests, hobbies, work, life, everything. And I don't know if you know Chris. I will share some links to his website and channels and wherever you can find Chris. Chris is a man of various traits, I would say, and various roles and occupations. And today the idea was that we will be talking about personal brand. But of course, we cannot not talk about retrospectives or the famous agile people that Chris interviewed. So I would also like to discover a little bit about you, because what happened to me was whenever I look at your profile on LinkedIn or your website, I always discover something new about you that you do or that you did or that you're planning to do. So I would love to also keep discovering, because I think the topic of personal branding is very relevant to your person. And I think that would be an interesting talk.
I think it's a great topic, and it's increasingly poignant for me, because only last week I hosted Bob Galen on a meetup that I host with Virtually Agile, and his talk was about showing your value as an agile coach. Now, I believe, and actually the polls we did as part of that exercise or that meetup, we had 122 people, I think. And at the beginning we said, hey, do you believe you're capable of showing your value, or how confident are you in showing your value? And the majority of people said they weren't very confident in that, because, you know, there aren't really very many metrics out there that tell you, is this agile coach or scrum master doing a great job? It's quite tough to articulate what value you bring. But it also segued nicely into the branding side of things and being able to storytell and share with others your value. So it's a powerful topic for me right now, and I'm very keen to share with others how I've gone about creating a brand for myself and who I am.
Great. I'm happy you say that, and that's something that's been on your mind, because it also has been on my mind. And not, it's funny you say those things about metrics, because, you know, we are the first ones usually to tell the developers and the teams to measure what they do, to measure the development, to measure the effectiveness or efficiency. And then how do we measure our own progress, our own efficiency, and how we can help, right? So it's very interesting. And for me, just to add upon that, I recently was thinking a lot about, you know, like, people like to hate stuff. It's somehow trendy to hate SAFe. And I understand SAFe as in Scaled Agile Framework. And I was thinking about that, like, when I was a junior scrum master, let's say, I thought there are topics I should not talk about, or there are topics there are words I should not use, like waterfall or project manager. Like, you shouldn't say project manager if you're an agile person, you know? So there's also this part of the role, and I think also like positioning yourself. Can we be just us? And I loved because somebody commented, you do you, you know? And I thought that's just the best advice you can give to someone who's starting and who's like feeling like, should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I not?
You do you is fantastic advice because you can't be anyone else. You can pretend to be someone else, but that won't get you very far and you'll probably not enjoy it. And it'll probably be something that's not sustainable, but you do you. You talk about what is you're passionate about. The first thing I recommend to anyone who wants to start creating a brand for themselves is find their voice. And what I mean by their voice is find something they are passionate enough about that they can share content about consistently. Because it's all well and good saying, hey, I want to create a brand and starting to create some or do some writing, maybe some blog posts, maybe some creating some images or videos or otherwise. But if you do that for a few weeks and then never do it again, that's just a project that you started and not continued. A bit like if you want to run a marathon, you don't start by running a marathon straight away. You build up to it over time and you build habits around how to be a healthy person who's capable of running. And creating content and creating a brand is exactly that. You build a habit for it, but it starts with finding something that you can consistently do over and over because it doesn't happen overnight.
Oh, there are two things that I love about it. I would like you to explore a little bit more. And one is, as I said at the very beginning, for me, you are the retrospective legend. So you found your topic, right? And we could also see, for example, Martin Dahlmine, which I never know how to pronounce his last name. I hope he doesn't mind. And he's the guy about the sprint goals, right? Mm-hmm. And we already know that. And he wrote a book about sprint goals. I think it's a really good advice. It's like, don't just go and share everything. Focus on something that you consider important, you're passionate, and then you will find ways to do more and more and more of it. So could you maybe explain a little bit how did you start with the retrospectives and how is it going?
How's it going? Well, so my beginnings with retrospectives, like many, I was obviously performing as a scrum master in the agile world, and I was doing these retros on a cadence on what I consider kind of an event-driven retrospective. To me is one that is driven by something's gone wrong or something's happened. You need to have like, it's like almost like a root cause analysis or something. That's an event-driven retrospective. Whereas a cadence-driven retrospective is one you tend to have every iteration, right? So every 2 weeks is a common time frame. So I'm a scrum master and I'm doing these retros and I'm like, well, we do the same ones over and over. And I noticed the disengagement. And I noticed the same things coming up over and over. And I remembered at the time using one of my favorite resources back then was tastycupcakes.org. And it was always great for inspiration from other agile people. Yeah, so it was always great for inspiration from other agile people. And I found on there this retro, the Elvis retro. And it used the Elvis discography to prompt people to think about how they could improve. So you play the songs in the background and you're like, hey, what should we return to sender? And I just thought, you know, that's about saying no. What should we be saying no to more? And, you know, don't step on my blue suede shoes and et cetera. So it uses the songs. A little less conversation, a little more action. One of my favorite ones. One of my favorite ones. It's, hey, what do we need to stop talking about and actually do, right? So we keep talking about these things, but they don't get done. Which of those do we need to prioritize? And it went from being this common, repetitive meeting to something that promoted fun and enjoyment and fresh thinking and new ideas. And I thought, okay, so that's the king of retrospectives, obviously Elvis being the king. I can create the queen. So I took Queen the Rock Bands, right? And I took their songs and I said, right, how can I turn this into a retrospective? So you've got Don't Stop Me Now and you play Don't Stop Me Now. And it's about what should we absolutely keep doing as a team? What's going really well for us? Or you say Under Pressure. You play the song. And again, what's putting us under pressure as a team? What's causing us unnecessary stress? And you're still getting to the root of a retrospective, which is good discussions, good insights, and ultimately finding actions. But you're doing so in a way that people enjoy and that's nostalgic because people hear the songs and they smile and they're happy. I remember doing this retro, that Queen retro, with a very serious program manager who never smiled. And he was always work-focused. And during that retro was the first time I ever saw him just engage with the rest of the team and share that he loved Queen. And it just became this great opportunity to connect with fellow individuals, because we all love music and television and books and video games. We escape reality, and you can build these into the way we do retrospectives. So that was the starting point. That was the origin. I saw something that just wasn't working for me. I was bored. I saw other people bored. I wanted to do better. Started creating something, shared it. It went really, really successfully. I think that was one of my first big LinkedIn posts, which people resonated with very well. And then I started going, okay, well, I can do that for another thing and another thing. And then it became, challenge me, give me a challenge, like pick any topic and I'll create a retro around it. And I've learned that I'm pretty good at it. And people come up to me and say, how did you even come up with that? Yeah. And what I've actually learned just a couple of days ago is that I have ADHD. And I think that helps with my creativity. It's a great creative outlet for my creativity, and it helps me. It's definitely helped. So that's the story of retrospectives. As for where it is now, it's still a mainstay of what I do. I go around the world speaking about how to do great retrospectives. I'm speaking at several more events for the rest of this year, including Agile 2023 in Orlando, Agile in the City, Bristol and Bath at the end of the month. I'm going to be in Germany and Lithuania and all sorts of countries, networking and meeting people, but sharing my top tips on retrospectives.
Whoa!
I'm also writing a book on it as well, and that's like my Everest.
That's awesome because I think we have like the Agile retrospectives, like one book on the retrospectives, you know, in the whole Agile world. Of course, probably in any other book you can find like chapters, but that would be a great addition.
Agile retrospective books out there. There's a few more. There's Agile retrospectives by Diana Larson. That's making good teams great. I've literally got it right here on my desk. There's also Retrospective Anti-Patterns by Aino von Cori. She's also been on my podcast. There's a book by Norm Kurth, which introduces the retrospective prime directive. So there are a few more out there. But I wanted to bring my own energy and creativity to how I do retrospectives and focusing on bringing fun.
Okay, so talking about fun, I already think this is a great recommendation and a tip for personal brand. Like, first of all, be passionate and just start doing something that you're good at and share and share and share. And then it's easier, of course, to do a habit around it, right? Because you already have some kind of a topic. For me, for example, that I do the random, like, oh, today my team was struggling with metrics, so let's talk about metrics. And the other day my team is struggling with sprint goals, so you know, it's not so easy to create a habit around that. So I was thinking about, because you are, I really like the fact that you add, like, you started with the songs, because songs are, everybody likes music, and especially as you said, the story with the product manager, sometimes people that you would not expect to like engage suddenly engage because something resonates with them. But I also have a question that popped to my mind. I remember when I started as a scrum master and I was like working 2 years, and I thought you have to play games and you have to do games, because otherwise, you know, it was like a bit of a competition with the other scrum master. Like, the other scrum master was doing so many games, so I should as well. And then I noticed that sometimes when you convert this to like a game, people start feeling like, I'm not in kindergarten anymore. I came here, I hope you will treat me like, and we also evangelize, like, we want people to be treated like adults, you know, we shouldn't be holding their hands all the time. And then we bring like, hello, this is the Lego for you, and let's do some games. And then they feel like this disconnection. Okay, you just want me to be an adult, but then you bring games. So I would like to ask you about that. Like, how do you deal with that? There are for sure people who are like, I don't want to play any games. I want to this be a serious environment at work.
And it definitely happens. I think that the very biggest bit of advice I could give there is that you shouldn't force fun, right? So I believe, and the way I approach every situation is that it's all an experiment. So I might propose, hey team, let's try doing it this way for a change, and let's just see what happens as a consequence. And you get to decide whether it works or not, whether it resonated with you. And in fact, what I'd rather do is say, here are some options. Which of these would you like to try? So you empower them to decide rather than forcing it upon them. But ultimately, you need to find what their tolerance is. Some people do just come to work, and that's okay, right? We need to be empathetic about that. But I think there's a little known concept that people don't speak enough about, which is definition of fun, right? What is a team's definition of fun? What is fun to them? Because it's not a one size fits all. So fun to one team could be, yeah, let's go play some Dungeons and Dragons and think about how that can help us improve as a team. Whereas another team said, you know what, I don't care about that. And I don't want to come to your after dinner, after work bowling party. That's not fun for me. I don't want to feel shamed for not wanting to be part of that. So I definitely think that the best approach is to consider everything an experiment, try something, learn how it goes, empower those involved to choose how they work, find out what their definition of fun is, and then use that information to create something that fits their context, that culture, that microculture.
Okay, that makes sense. What you said, I think it's really important that sometimes you don't want to also exclude some people because, you know, there will be like half of the team or the majority of the team, but there will be like two people that won't participate and then they feel disconnected and it's like with the people that smoke cigarettes, you know, they go outside and they create their groups and you feel like you're missing out. And what I saw, people just start going out even though they don't smoke. It's just a part of being connecting and team building and just talking and gossiping, and you are in the group, not outside of the group. So yeah, that's important as well.
Yeah, there's a good friend of mine, Scott Sievright and Sathpal Singh. They presented at Lean Agile London last week, and they were talking about creating communities. And one of the things that they alluded to was the concept of othering, which is exactly what you were just talking about there, where your behavior, your language might force others to feel like they are not part of the group. And let's reflect on some other language you used earlier. You were talking about being wary of posting about safe, about waterfall. If we as agile people, and we're supposed to be a very accepting group of people, if we as agile people start saying, oh, you're not agile enough, or you know, you're doing waterfall and that's bad, we are basically segregating that group and suggesting we're better than them somehow because they work in a different way. Now, fundamentally, I mentioned experimentation. Fundamentally, I am agnostic to way of working. I do not care if it's agile, waterfall, or otherwise, right? I don't care if you want to create a Frankenstein's monster hybrid of every framework you've got. What matters fundamentally is, are the outcomes you're seeking or problems you're trying to solve being delivered to? Are you continuously improving your ways of working? And are those ways of working you have helping you achieve those outcomes? And then from there, it's all a matter of finding what works for that culture, that context, that situation, those people at hand. Don't try and force ways of working on other people, and don't other people, don't use othering, don't behave in ways that create different groups.
Yeah, this actually happened recently on one of my posts that somebody wrote that, you know, everybody's experience is valid. And somebody else wrote to them, oh, no, so experiences are not valid. And like, okay. And then we think, are we still agile people here? Or are we trying to prove something, you know, that we are better? And we start excluding people this way. And I also learned this in my life, that the more experience I have, the more I work with the teams, the less orthodox I am about agile. You know, people tell me like, no, like we will do this. We will go through, for example, at the sprint review, we will go through every ticket and like comment the shit out of it. And like, well, you know, I would rather focus on the outcomes, not on the output. But then I saw, and this is something that opened my eyes, that for them, it was like a bit of an autopsy of the sprint, of all the stories that there were. But I noticed that for them, it served as kind of a scrum of scrums, where they actually understood what each team did and how the technical implementation went. We don't use any scaling framework, but this meeting is actually making that for them. You know, they learn about each other's implementations. And for as much as at the first sight, I was like, this is terrible. Why are we talking this to this kind of detail? Like, is somebody trying to control them, you know? And then I understand, no, it's just the way that they know about each other's implementations, problems, how they solve them, and so on. And it was just such a, you know, like, okay, now I see that sometimes it's good to just let people do and understand the reasons behind what they do, even though it might seem totally waterfall or command and control, because they have their reasons for sure. So that's my story.
That's a good story. It's a real life example, because there's the what the book says, right? There's what the book says you should do. And then there's reality. And I think many people, many agilists, many learners in any profession, in fact, probably go through this exact same journey. They start off with, well, here's what the theory says, and I'm going to start with the theory. And then I'm going to learn what happens in practice, and I'm going to be able to understand why the theory is there, but also understand that things don't always go to the book and you need to be pragmatic about things. And it's not about mechanically applying Scrum or any framework, because that is a recipe for a disengagement and not great outcomes. But it's about fundamentally understanding what works for the people involved and their situation and what they're trying to achieve. So what they essentially had here was a single meeting, which by the book that you would have, you know, certain people would have said, oh, you're not doing this right, you need to change. But actually, when you dove a bit deeper, you understood, well, it was a meeting that was serving dual purpose and it was working for them. And what I often describe Agile is just a series of feedback loops. Those feedback loops enable transparency. They enable you to learn from what you're doing and adjust your approach accordingly based on what you learn, giving yourself a better chance of succeeding. So this sprint review was a feedback loop. They looked at every ticket. They understood the situation. They used that information, I'm assuming, and you tell me if I'm incorrect, I'm assuming they used that information to plan what they were going to do next accordingly.
Of course, yeah.
And there we go. Do it. It served its purpose as a feedback loop.
Yeah. That's why, I think we should just stop being so orthodox or like very theoretical. Sometimes I feel people are like so theoretical. It's like, oh, come on, give me a break. Let's just see how we can provide value here and what actually people feel that provides value, and we let them be. So going back to our personal brand, and I would like to explore a bit more. You said you gave us your first recommendation. What would be your second one?
So my first recommendation was around finding your voice. It was kind of linked to my second recommendation, which is consistency. So as I mentioned, it's all well and good trying to create some content, but if you don't do that over and over and over and build a habit for it, it probably won't happen. Obviously, it depends on your goals, how quickly you want to grow and otherwise, but consistently putting content out there, using that as a feedback loop, learning what works. So you could put a bit of content out there and it resonates with people and they respond to it, and that results in a greater or more conversations and more likes and engagements and more people seeing your profile. That tends to be a sign of something good. So learn what works, combine that with what you enjoy, and keep doing that over and over. Now, the third thing I'd recommend is don't be afraid to reshare something that is successful. So you don't have to create new things every time, right? If a certain bit of content resonates really well, give it like 3 to 6 months and then repurpose that bit of content. You can take that exact same thought process. Maybe it's a retrospective. And the way I used to do retrospectives was I'd just share a screen grab thumbnail image of the template inside Miro. I'd share that and then I'd create a new one. And then that one I created, that number one of 110, for example, I wouldn't share it again because I think I'd have to create a new one. But that's not the case. You can't assume that just because you shared it, someone saw it.
Yeah.
And what you need to think about is how can I take that same thing and put it into a different medium? Maybe it can go into a LinkedIn carousel these days and people can just scroll through it. That's a common thing I've been doing. Maybe you can turn that into a 30-second video showing all of the different prompts as part of the retro. And that might resonate to a different audience, but they like to consume things visually. So repurposing content can be part of your content strategy.
Oh, that's a good one.
And then if there was a four, it would just be prepared to suck at something first, right?
Yeah, I know
the
that
first time you do something, the first time you do something, you're going to be awful. if anyone wants to go and watch one of Maria's first videos, I bet they're not as good as the one that's going to come out today. And you could do the same with me. My first video, I used my webcam for audio. I had awful lighting, you know, and all I did is I just said, you know what, I want to try it. I want to get it out there. Because if I waited till I had the perfect conditions and the perfect setup, then I would have been wasting a lot of time or spending a lot of money. And then I could have learned that it wasn't for me and I didn't enjoy it. So don't worry about the perfect conditions. Be prepared to suck at something first, because you will. Everyone does. And then learn from what you're doing and adjust accordingly. So there we go.
That's a good one. And did you read any books around like Atomic Habits or something around like how to create a habit, or did it just come naturally to you?
What's interesting is that I didn't read a single book about marketing, about content creation. I didn't do a single course. I just embraced my agile mindset and said, hey, if I was a product, how would I create myself as a product? And one of the first things you can do as a product is just get a first version of something out there and then iterate upon it. And that's what I did. And obviously you start maybe with LinkedIn, and then you think, oh, maybe I could try a website, and maybe I can try a YouTube channel, and maybe I can try a podcast. And you're starting to see a trend here. I, with my ADHD brain, decide to commit to lots of different things because they're fun and new and exciting. But yeah, you've just got to experiment, learn from what you're doing. Then when I did read Atomic Habits, I was like, shit, I wish I read this years ago. This would have been helpful. Because it is a very powerful book in helping you create habits. One of the simple things you can do to create a habit is to make it easy, make it visible so you're continuously exposed to it in your environment. If you want to read a book, for example, don't have it on the bookshelf, put it on your pillow every day so that before you get into bed, you physically have to move it. And then you're like, okay, it's physically there. I'm going to remind myself to do it. Mm-hmm. That's making it visible. Making it easy is not saying I'm going to read the whole book. You just say, I'm going to commit to the first 10 pages. Right. And then I'm going to see how I feel. And the same approaches apply in Agile. We take large bits of work, we chunk them to smaller things, and we commit to that first. Right. We make things visible. We have information radiators. You know, your Jira, your workflow tools, they are things that make things visible. So you have transparency, you're continuously exposed to them, you're reminded about them.
Yeah, that's a good one. I also thought that's a great book to read when you want to learn a habit or unlearn and habits, because that's also the thing, right?
Unlearn a bad habit, yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking, could you maybe share some so we can, you know, you're a visual guy, you create so many great stuff. Could you share some with us and explain how that works for those, especially who never saw anything you did? I'm super happy to share it and to see it. So this is your website.
If you've never seen it, if you've never seen any of my work, you probably haven't been on a very little known platform called LinkedIn, because I share a lot of stuff on there. On my website, I give pretty much everything away for free. So if you want to try a new retro, you have lots of options. You just need to navigate your way to the templates section of my website, and then you can filter down by category. So Maria, give me a category. Go. What should I choose?
Food.
Food. All right.
Yes, please.
Nicely, I want to get to we'll get to the Taco Tuesday retro. Interestingly, which was a challenge from Mike Cohen when he appeared.
Right,
on my
podcast. I watched that. I love that. And look at that. It's here.
There we go. And then if you want to download it, you just press download. You put it into your own workflow tool, your own Miro, whatever whiteboard tool you're using, and off you go. So there are a lot of visual templates that get people thinking differently. The icebreaker for this Taco Tuesday retro, for example, gets the team building their perfect taco with lots of little movable objects. So you learn about what their preferences are food-wise, and you then use some of the prompts. And what I really emphasize is they are options, right? So let's say you've got a 45 minute or an hour time box. I don't expect the team to get through all of these prompts. They are options at your disposal. And I often empower the team to choose which ones fit, okay? Cool. So you go through these options. With each option, I encourage silent divergent thinking first, so people to get their thoughts down individually on post-it notes. That way you don't have dominant voices taking over and drowning out the quieter voices. So everyone gets their thoughts down on post-its. Then I encourage a bit of discussion, some insights. Say, what do we learn from this? What stands out to us? Is there anything that's unclear, anything surprising? And then I encourage a dot vote. Which of these things do we need to address with an action? Then we create an action, and then we move on to the next prompt.
Nice.
So let's say an example, right? We've got a taco and some people like hot food, some people like cold food, right? Or cooler food, shall we say, non-spicy food, right? Mm-hmm. So you could say hot sauce, right? What is the hot sauce in our team's taco? Where do we need to spice things up, right? What would motivate us? And then you could flip that. That would be one prompt. And then the flip side of that is, hey, where do we need to cool things down, right? So some people don't like spicy food. They need to add a bit of mayo or yogurt to their meal. So what would cool things down for us? What would allow us to slow down and find a sustainable pace, right? Because things are getting a bit too chaotic. So they're just prompts. They're options. Lots of templates, and I create them all the time. The latest one was based on the London subway. They're all themed around the colors. So, you know, Halloween ones, you've got Netflix ones, you've got Rick and Morty, if that's your thing. There are some that are based not just on fun themes, but serious ones like books. Mm-hmm. So you could use the book Drive by Dan Pink and use the logic around that. So autonomy, mastery, and purpose to find out, hey, what would make us feel more autonomous as a team? What would give us more mastery as a team, etc. Or you could use the 8 lean wastes of software engineering logic from or thinking behind from Tom and Mary Poppendick. And you identify what are the top wastes for us as a team. And let's try and find some actions as to how we address those wastes. So it's not just about fun. It's about creatively identifying ways the team can improve. And then fundamentally, it's about continuous improvement. Continuous improvement is continuous, which means you don't have to wait to a retrospective for it to happen. You should be doing it as you go along. So there's a few examples of some visuals. If I then went to another reason I'm quite visual, and you can probably spot this. This is my manual of me. And this is a great creation by Steve Samson Jones. I'm a huge believer in these as a tool for letting people know who you are, what you're about, what your working preferences are.
And wow, and that's so visual, so great, because I'm used to these kinds of things, but written, and you are like, okay, I will read about you. But this is so visual. I love this one.
And it's just a great way. It's a great icebreaker to build this with a new team, or even to when you've just landed a new company, walk people through your manual of me. Yeah.
And do you have also that draft that we can just download a template for it?
I don't have one for this, but there are great templates on the Miroverse that can be used for creating
these. Cool. Yeah. We have not much time left, and I would love to also understand what else is it that you do. Do you do like trainings? Do you consult, or what is it that you actually do like every day?
I do too many things. So my main things that I focus on is consulting. That's one area of focus. So I go into companies and I help them continuously improve. That typically looks like enterprise coaching roles or outcome focused delivery. I sometimes go into companies and facilitate retrospectives on their behalf because they're looking for someone to come in and do so. But that typically happens at scale. So I might come in and facilitate a retro for the whole company or for a community of practice. So hundreds of people in parallel rather than just teams.
Hey.
I also speak at events and conferences around the world. I mentioned a few of those earlier. I have a podcast with some great guests, including Lisa Radkins, Mike Cohen. I've had Jeff Watts on the show. I had Lieutenant David Marquet, who wrote the book Turn the Ship Around.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah.
That was a season.
How do you get those people to talk? How do you contact them?
So quite simply, to get someone to speak on your show, it starts by asking. There we go.
Never thought about that.
Simple as that. Honestly, I think a lot of people out there will say, oh, I would love to do a podcast, but I'm afraid of asking that person because they're too busy or otherwise, right? My very first guest on my podcast was Lisa Radkins. That was before the podcast existed, okay? It didn't even begin as a podcast. It began as, hey, Lisa, I'd love to talk to you sometime about Agile. Would you like to have a chat? And she was open to it, and she responded with it. And it took a few months because she's very busy, but it took a few months, but it happened. And then I tried Mike Cohen, and again, he was open to it. So you would be surprised how open people are to appearing on podcasts, to having a conversation with you. Obviously, they can still say no. They might be too busy. And right now, I'm having to say no to everyone who comes at me with anything new, because knowing me, I will get distracted and say, oh, that's shiny and fun. I'll want to do that.
Yeah.
But it stops me finishing my book. So first and foremost, if you want to get someone on the show, just start by asking.
Cool. I love that. And I love the variety of work that you do. It's so great. And, you know, the consistency, what you said, is just admirable for me, especially because I know how much work that is and how much time you have to spend to do this.
Mm.
And
the last
you
one
have,
I did, I do deliver training as well. So I am aligned with Jeff Watts as part of the Agile Mastery Institute, and we deliver training over a long-term basis. So rather than just going on a two-day course, and again, I'm not here to other the people that run two-day courses. That's not what I'm saying.
No.
I personally believe that learning happens better when it's over a longer period of time. I'm sure you've been to a training before, Maria, and you've been bombarded with lots of information over 2 days, and then you're left to your own devices to go and put that into practice. And the problem is, you might have been too bombarded with information that when you put that into practice, it didn't go quite well, and then you have no one to feedback loop whether that was right or wrong, or to adjust your approach. So I take cohorts of 12 people over a 6-month journey together, and it's all about going from a good to great scrum mastery.
Wow, that's awesome. I love that. It's like a journey, right? As opposed to this 2 days of intensive training. It's a bit like a boot camp, but in a lightweight version, right? It's a very lightweight boot camp.
I think a boot camp would be like you are immersed in something for a very short time period. This is probably more like a training camp where you go off to the army for a period of time, and then you are equipped with all the tools and skills you need to be able to go out and do whatever it is you're doing for the army.
Great. We are with our time up. That was awesome to talk to you. I hope that will serve a lot of people to help with their personal brand. And I hope to talk to you soon. So many topics to explore.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me on the show.
Bye-bye.
Bye.